Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, Ireland needs a lung cancer screening programme for people aged between 55 and 75 with a history of smoking. Well, that's according to the Irish Thoracic Society, the national body for health professionals working in respiratory care. They're making the call ahead of World Lung Day, which is next week. And to talk more about this, I'm joined now in the studio by Professor Marcus Kennedy, who is a consultant respiratory physician at Cork University Hospital and is also president of the Irish Thoracic Society. Marcus, you're very welcome.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you for being here. Great to have you with us. So you want to see this lung cancer screening programme for smokers and ex-smokers, are you saying?
Yeah, so the international guidelines in general would suggest folks that are over 55 that smoked a pack a day for 30 years.
Right. So this is the type of screening programme that we have. Breast screening, we've cervical screening, bowel cancer screening. It'd be along those lines, would it?
Absolutely along those lines. So folks would be invited in through the GP practice. People that are identified who are smokers would be invited in and assessed for their risk of lung cancer. So there is a pilot study up and running through the RCSI that's assessing how we would do this in Ireland. The UK have already started and they have enrolled over 500,000 people at this point. So the model would be you'd be invited in for screening and we would screen not only lung cancer but also COPD. So essentially it's a mobile unit that may be parked in a shopping centre, for instance, in the UK. Mm-hmm. You would come in, you'd have smoking cessation counselling, you'd have a pulmonary function test to look for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and then you would be assessed whether or not to go on for a low-dose CT scan to assess whether or not you've lung cancer or any other abnormalities.
Right, so you'd need significant capacity in the system then to cope with all of that, wouldn't you?
Absolutely, yeah. So the not only does the service identify lung cancer in about 2% of patients, but about 30 to 50% of people coming in for screening have other abnormalities, including thyroid nodules, kidney cysts, liver cysts, other lung disease. And about one in three have a lung nodule. So that really brings in a lot of people into the public service who need further testing. Mm-hmm.
So the need for this then, are you saying that things are being missed at the moment because we don't have this screening service?
Yes, the unfortunate thing about lung cancer is people present late. And the reason for that is, let's say we compare it to breast cancer. So females who have breast cancer would feel a lump or would have a symptom. However, lung cancer, you don't feel anything in your chest often. People are often smokers. So those symptoms that they get with lung cancer, for instance, cough, shortness of breath, would also potentially be caused by a benign condition, COPD. So people unfortunately present late.
Mm, because they're used to coughing and they're used to having problems with the respiratory area and they mightn't notice that things have changed.
Absolutely. So we do have a number of concerning symptoms. So if you have a persistent cough that's new for over 3 months, if you've lost weight, if you cough up blood, and if you maybe have an unusual chest wall pain, those are concerning symptoms, and we have the National Cancer Control Programme Rapid Access Lung Cancer Clinic set up, which really have helped streamline folks with symptoms. But the problem is people who don't have symptoms, and that's where screening comes mm-hmm. in.
And of course, we should say that if anyone has any of those symptoms that you've just outlined there, it's straight to the GP.
Absolutely. And we see patients within 2 weeks, and we know the target is to work them up within 4 weeks. So it is a very, very good service and fast acting. But again, the problem is those people that don't have symptoms.
Yeah. So when it comes to lung cancer then, what sort of successes are we having with treatment?
So treatment internationally is improving. About 5 to 10 years ago, unfortunately, those with advanced lung cancer, survival was a year to 18 months. However, now we have a number of developments, including better surgery, better localized radiation, but also now a number of medications that are online. And there's a lot of excitement now about immunotherapy. And this really is helping control the disease and even potentially making it a chronic disease for a number of people.
Mm-hmm. COPD, then you mentioned that as well. That's on the rise, is it?
Yeah, in general, worldwide, COPD is on the rise for a number of reasons. It follows the smoking trajectory by about 30 years. So most Irish males started smoking with Irish males started maybe in the 20s, females in the 40s to 60s. As we get older, we get more COPD. So COPD is chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. It really is cough, shortness of breath and wheeze in people with a history of smoking.
Mm, so it is related to smoking. Can you have COPD if you never smoked?
You can. So about 90 to 95% is related to smoking. However, other chronic lung conditions like persistent asthma or occupational exposures or being exposed in the environment to smoke, and people with a history of tuberculosis, for instance, can also get COPD.
Mm-hmm. Anecdotally, we're hearing a lot about persistent coughs at the moment, whether it's RSV related or this 100-day cough that you hear about. What are you seeing?
Oh, yeah. So we're seeing lots and lots of people coming in with persistent coughs who've never had issues like this before. I guess one of the thoughts here is that maybe during COVID, we had a reduction in immunity to the normal viruses that go around every year. Because of social distancing, isolation, hand washing, but now they're back with a vengeance. And as you said, people are getting these persistent coughs. We call that bronchitis. So a persistent cough after a respiratory tract infection that leads them to present to a healthcare provider.
Mm-hmm. What can you do about that?
Really, it often will settle down. Some people need to go on an inhaler therapy. We do need to order a chest X-ray to make sure there's nothing else going on. But really, it's a matter of settling it down and then thinking about lung health in general. So obviously, hand washing, hand hygiene, getting your vaccines, exercise, clean air, and diet help your lung health in general.
Because if someone has a persistent cough for 3 months, it's an exhausting thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. People can be awake at night with this. So presenting to your GP, oftentimes by the time you present to your GP, the actual infection is gone, but the airways are still inflamed. But your GP will assess whether you could have persistent infection. And as I said, a chest X-ray is warranted in a lot of these people. And again, we're noticing people that have just one, two, three infections in a row, viral infections that are leading to this persistent cough this year.
All right. And you put all of that down to not being exposed during the COVID period to the viruses that we would normally be exposed to.
That's the hypothesis, yes.
OK, yeah. Now a message in here from a listener who is 33 and a heavy smoker. I've smoked since I was 16 and I really want to quit. I'm terrified of getting lung cancer. It's an impossible question, but if I quit tomorrow and the fact that I'm young, could my body recover?
Absolutely. So we say after about 10 or 15 years that this person will reduce the risk of getting lung cancer to the same as the general population.
Mm-hmm. So that's good news for that person if they can manage
yes.
to quit.
Yes.
And that is the big question for them. But of course, you're in favour of quitting. We have a number of conversations on this programme about vaping.
Yeah.
And we know the restrictions that are being put in place now by the government on accessing vapes. Where do you stand on vaping?
Well, it's important to say, first of all, that the HSE stance is vaping is not regulated for smoking cessation. That the standard nicotine replacement therapy is the initial step followed by counselling. So you've got to divide vaping into a smoking cessation tool versus starting vaping in the first place. So the starting vaping, as you know, is often young people. So as you know, the strategy now, we've already banned the sale of any nicotine inhaling products to people under 18. There's the Tobacco 21 strategy that the Lung Alliance would support, also the Cancer Society, also the Cardiology Society, to push that potentially out to 21. Most people start smoking before the age of 18, definitely before the age of 21. So if you can stop people smoking before that, you would very much reduce morbidity rate to smoking. And one in two people who smoke would die of a disease related to smoking. So vaping, I mean, if you ask a respiratory physician in general, we would say that vaping is probably safer than smoking cigarettes. However, really to figure that out, you need 20 to 30 years of somebody or a group of people vaping alone. And we don't have that evidence as yet. So as regards smoking cessation, as I said, the HSE doesn't support it. The NHS now have approved electronic cigarettes. However, they want evidence to suggest that they're safe and effective.
But your own personal view on it, because in Australia, there are plans to restrict it for sale only in pharmacies. Do you think that's the way to go?
You're right. I think if we are going to approve these should be regulated as a medicinal product, as opposed to a consumer product, and that's how they're regulated right now. So the HSE does, through the National Environmental Health Service, assess the various different devices. And for instance, recently they suggested with the withdrawal of two devices which had over the recommended amount of nicotine in them. But really, you're right. In Australia, definitely the right way to go, regulate them as a medicinal product. However, evidence to show that they're safe and they're effective.
Okay, so for you, the concern, is it about the amount of nicotine that people are taking in, or is it about vaping in and of itself and what that might be doing to your lung health?
So first of all, yeah, so for children, vaping, there's a number of issues here other than lung health. And we know that they can cause acute lung injury, and we know nicotine itself is not good for the lungs. However, there's a few issues with young people. First of all, nicotine is not good for the developing brain, and that's been proven in animal models. So we really have a concern about young people inhaling nicotine in general. The second thing is we're seeing aggression, actually, in young people who are withdrawn from nicotine. So there are high concentrations of nicotine in the electronic cigarettes. The third thing is it's suggested that maybe 50% or more people who vape eventually smoke. So for the younger people, they're the big issues. Also, you've got to be careful that, you know, I have four children and you've got to be careful what's in electronic cigarette. You can put in products of marijuana in electronic cigarettes. So I would always say don't take a puff off an electronic cigarette from somebody else.
Funny you should mention that, because we are going to be talking about HHCs with Professor Colin O'Gara, who's head of addiction services at St. John of God Hospital. That's coming up later in the hour. I just have another message here from a listener who says that they're desperate. My wife is 70 and has smoked for over 40 years. I don't smoke or drink. I've tried to get her to quit loads of times, but she won't listen to me. She insists she's not as high risk because she only smokes 10 to 15 cigarettes a day, but the science and myself know better. Now, I don't know if you can answer this question, Marcus, but he wants to know, how can he get through to her?
So Mark Twain said, giving up cigarettes is easy. I've done it 20 times. So just because you failed the first time doesn't mean that you're going to fail another time. Nicotine replacement therapy, I would stress that. So what we would recommend is a combination of a nicotine patch, but also a short acting nicotine product. So for instance, there's a Nicorette inhaler you get in the chemist. This doesn't get absorbed in the lungs, it actually gets absorbed in the mouth. Now, I always say to my patients, it's not the same as smoking. You're not going to get the high concentration of nicotine to your brain immediately. But the patch gives you a low dose for 24 hours. The Nicorette inhaler that you get in the chemist, these are regulated. Often people find the habit of having something in their hand hard to break. And then that gives you concentrations of nicotine when you inhale it. So I would encourage people, and if someone has given them up for 2 weeks before, I really tap them on the back saying, you can do it, you've done it before, and try again.
Do it again. And he just has to, I don't know, his wife has to want to do it. I mean, that's the bottom line, isn't it? Marcus, yeah. Thanks so much for coming into us. It was great to see you. That's Professor Mark Kennedy, who is a consultant respiratory physician at Cork University Hospital and president of the Irish Thoracic Society. We'll be back after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.